My name is Professor John Polak. I'm Director of the Centre for Transport Studies at Imperial College London.
What is the focus of your research in terms of transport?
My personal research focuses on two main areas. The first is the development of mathematical and statistical models of travel behaviour. These models try to understand or help us to understand why people make the sorts of journeys that they do, why they travel when they do, why they travel where they do, and at the times they do. And the role of such models is to help us to understand how transport policy innovations or new transport technologies or new transport services may affect the pattern of mobility in a region or a city, and by that means help us to better plan the way in which those technologies or systems are deployed. And these models play an important part in major investment decisions in both the public and the private sector, and have done for a number of years.
So I suppose from a consumer standpoint, if I know when the bus is going to come, that would be really an excellent service. How far are we from that kind of technology, not just seeing that the bus is 2 or 3 minutes away, but actually having a better ability to plan our own journeys?
Well, that's an area that touches very much on the second stream of work that I'm involved with, which is intelligent transport systems, which is the convergence of positioning, navigation, communication technologies with traditional transport modelling to form the basis for new services to individual travellers, to network managers and to others. So to come back to your original question, we're very close technologically to being able to offer real-time individualised travel information. All the buses in London very soon will be equipped with GPS devices, which enables them to be tracked in real time or almost real time. And that could provide the basis for predictive information customized to the location and travel intent of individual travelers. What we don't quite have yet, and this is true in many areas, are good business models for suppliers operating in that space. And one of the great challenges, I think, for the ITS field in the future is going to be to find the right sort of business models that will enable the enormous new data resources that are becoming available to us through pervasive sensing capabilities to be deployed commercially in ways that are driven by user needs rather than driven, as is often the case now, through a public policy procurement process.
So the technology's there. There are obviously, as you point out, some business models that need to be worked on. One of the things that kicks off every single day of the summit so far has been moving debate and discussion into action. What is it going to take for these types of systems? Because it seems like we have quite a few people who are in agreement about what has to be done, but how do you get to the point where it's actually getting done?
Well, I think you need two things at the most fundamental level. First of all, you need people with great ideas. And that means that you need to find ways of attracting the bright and creative and the tangentially thinking to deploy their capabilities into these sorts of problems, number one. Number two, I think you need a way in which people with those ideas can market test them so that they can and others can come to a view about whether this potentially world-beating idea is actually a world-beating idea or is part of the 95% that just look good but aren't. And I think that means we need a capability to experiment and to experiment on scale and to experiment in the real world as well as experimenting in silicon. And I think that's part of one of the big gaps that I see at the moment, which is that operational systems in the real world are so tightly focused, inevitably and correctly, on delivering their function They have customers to satisfy. They have standards to maintain. That there leaves little space to experiment. And I think we need to think carefully about how we might be able to manufacture space in which those experiments can be taken place, can be undertaken in such a way that they don't damage the core function, but enable the innovation to proceed.
So this morning, the British Transport Secretary was talking about the goals of the government and their policies. And I have to say, he probably mentioned fiscal responsibility and sustainability as much as he mentioned environmental sustainability. Moving from silicon-based, as you say, kind of statistical models to real-world trials is going to take some money. How do we convince not only government, but also the public that this is an important thing that they need to direct some of the much smaller pot, as the minister said this morning, to some of those projects? How are we going to convince the public?
I think we need to think about this in stages. I think we need, first of all, to recognize that it's probably unrealistic to expect the public purse, to shoulder a large proportion of the initial risk, particularly in the current climate. So I think we have to find ways in which private capital that potentially will benefit from the success of such ventures downstream can be given an opportunity to take the risks that it does in other contexts in these contexts as well, create opportunities for venture capital or other forms of private sector investment to take those initial steps and help innovators to take those initial steps. I think after some evidence is established and assembled through those initial steps, I think then one could reasonably start to put together a case for public funding. But I don't think now especially, but I also don't think in general and in principle, the exchequer, the public purse, the local government should be expected to act as a venture capitalist. I think that's not their business. But I think they are in the business of supporting scaling and development of ventures that have shown a benefit potentially.
Sustainable transport. What would a sustainable transport system look like? Now, I know that's probably a question, a very big question that you have quite detailed, but what are some of the key steps? You said that this is a stage process. What are some of the key steps that actually need to be taken to get to a sustainable transport system?
It is a big question, and the way of answering it, the most tempting way of answering it is to try to form in your mind some picture of an ideal and then try and describe it. But I don't like that approach, because my ideal won't be your ideal and it won't be their ideal. And I'm very much in agreement with the comments of the Secretary of State earlier today when he questioned the wisdom of government being too prescriptive. I think what we should be seeking in a sustainable transport system is to sustain those things that we truly value. And I think what we truly value as a community and as a society is our opportunity to aspire, to achieve, to become wealthy, to become successful. And I think that's what we should expect from a sustainable transport system. There will be things that stop the transport system enabling us to do that. There may be unpleasant or undesirable side effects, pollution of various sorts, congestion of various sorts. We should try to mitigate those problems. But the fundamental, for me, the fundamental definition of a sustainable transport system is one that sustains that ambition and aspiration.
Now, Imperial College has a new program, led European program, that is meant to sort of take some of the knowledge about transport systems and other areas to deal with the issues of climate change. Can you explain what that program is?
Yes, this is a new project which we're involved with called the Climate KIC. KIC, KIC, stands for Knowledge Innovation Community. It's an initiative ultimately of the European Commission, to try and address the perceived weakness of Europe in turning its scientific excellence into real-world benefit and commercial benefit. The idea is to link together universities across Europe, businesses across Europe, and public authorities across Europe around a number of thematic areas, and one of which is climate change. And within each such thematic area, to create a network, a consortium of those public and private sector players, focused on taking the research that's done in universities and in business and pulling it through into real-world products, services, and effects. And in the case of the climate kick, effects that address climate change adaptation and mitigation objectives. So part of what we're going to be doing in that, in the area of our work in transport and cities, is working very closely with a range of stakeholders here in London and elsewhere to develop the capability to attract exactly the sort of innovation community that I was alluding to earlier, the innovators with the fantastic ideas, the wider stakeholders interested in developing and evaluating those ideas, and the stakeholders interested in taking those ideas forward to market. So it's a very different sort of project than is traditional in a university. It's not about fundamentally doing new research. It's about drawing the research that we and others have done into true application. And I think in that sense, it's relevant to many of the themes that we're seeing discussed here today.
Thank you very much. Okay.